Today is Friday, July 31st, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Hong Kong says it's postponing its election because of the pandemic, but others cry foul.
There are a number of steps that governments need to take in a public health emergency to protect the rights to political participation.
Plus, the World Food Program warns the COVID-19 health pandemic has created a hunger pandemic.
We've seen a substantial increase in over 11 million people that are marching toward the brink of starvation.
And teeny tiny weddings. We'll have those stories and more next. As July comes to a close, the world has more than 17.3 million confirmed cases of COVID-19, according to Johns Hopkins University statistics. That's resulted in nearly 675,000 deaths. But the data shows more than 10.1 million people have also recovered from the novel coronavirus. In Hong Kong, Chief Executive Carrie Lam announced the special administrative region would postpone its September 6th election by a year.
This epidemic is a public health emergency situation. Therefore, we decided to invoke CAP 241, that is the Emergency Regulations Ordinance. Why is it that we are now in a situation that endangers public safety? Because we're seeing a spike in infection cases and number of deaths. We have an election leading to a large number of people gathering that who come into contact with each other that could pose a serious public health risk.
Lam said the decision to postpone the election went beyond the concerns of public safety and was intended to ensure free and fair elections. Hong Kong's pro-democracy lawmakers have accused the government of using the outbreak as an excuse to delay those elections. Human Rights Watch China director Sophie Richards spoke to VOA following the announcement.
Well, I think that especially in a jurisdiction that has extraordinary experience and capacity with respect to conducting elections under new or different or changing circumstances. You know, Hong Kong has a very sophisticated electoral system from an administrative perspective. And the fact that the authorities do not seem to have even considered for the purposes of, you know, of rebutting allegations that their decision is politically motivated, ideas like voting by mail or voting electronically, it is very difficult to see this decision as being a response to a political emergency and not a public health one.
One of the criticisms earlier this week was that the Hong Kong government was able to mobilize and provide relief to the citizens there in midst of the coronavirus pandemic. And they felt that they should have been able to enact some kind of policy to ensure that the voting was going to be able to take place as scheduled.
Well, I mean, look, there are a number of steps that governments need to take in a public health emergency to protect the rights to political participation. But those are, from our perspective, all entirely manageable. And, you know, the fact that Ms. Lam has not addressed the ways in which the rights to political participation, the right to run, the right to vote, you know, in postponing this election, I think shows that even you know, trying to rebut allegations of political motivations, the Hong Kong authorities have not put a lot of thought into this.
Sophie Richards is the China director for Human Rights Watch. Hackers linked to China's government targeted biotech company Moderna, a leading U.S.-based coronavirus vaccine research developer, earlier this year in a bid to steal valuable data. Reuters' Gloria So reports that that is according to a U.S. security official tracking Chinese hacking activity.
Chinese hackers targeted the biotech firm Moderna earlier this year, a company that announced a COVID-19 vaccine candidate in January. That's according to a U.S. security official who exclusively spoke to Reuters, who says the hackers were backed by Beijing. Moderna's vaccine candidate is one of the earliest and biggest bets by the Trump administration to fight the global pandemic.
Good morning.
This comes after the Justice Department last week revealed an indictment against two Chinese nationals accused of spying. The indictment listed three targets based in the U.S. working on COVID-19 research, one of which was known to be working on a vaccine in January. Moderna confirmed to Reuters that it had been in contact with the FBI and was made aware of, quote, information reconnaissance activities by the group in last week's indictment. The federal government is supporting development of the company's vaccine with nearly $500 million and helping Moderna launch a clinical trial of up to 30,000 people beginning this month. China is also racing to develop a vaccine, bringing together its state, military, and private sectors to combat a disease that has killed over 660,000 people worldwide. The Chinese government has consistently denied any role in hacking incidents across the globe. The spokesperson for China's embassy to the U.S. did not address specific questions sent by email. The two other medical companies mentioned in the indictment are firms based in California and Maryland, which would match Gilead Sciences and Novavax. Both companies declined to comment on specific cybersecurity matters.
Gloria So reports for Reuters News. The World Health Program is warning that the COVID-19 health pandemic is creating a hunger pandemic, which is threatening the stability of societies across Latin America. WFP reports as many as 16 million people in the region are facing severe food shortages. Lisa Schlein takes things from here.
Latin America is the region with the most confirmed COVID-19 cases globally, accounting for more than a quarter of the more than 17 million cases reported by Johns Hopkins University. The World Food Program warns the disease is driving hunger and food insecurity in a region already facing bankrupt economies, social and political instability, as well as drought and the start of the hurricane season. The agency projects the number of people in Latin America and the Caribbean facing severe food shortages in coming months will rise to 16 million. WFP Executive Director David Beasley recently visited a farming project run by the WFP in Ibarra in Ecuador's Imbabura province. In a video from the site, he speaks about the economic devastation created in Latin American countries by COVID-19. He says many farmers are barely eking out a living because of the pandemic, which is preventing them from selling their crops.
Just in the areas where WFP in this region alone, we've seen a substantial increase in over 11 million people that are marching toward the brink of starvation. So it's devastating, and it's why we must act. And we must act now so that we can bring some hope to people. Otherwise, you'll have political destabilization, mass migration, economic deterioration, supply chain disruption, and many people will starve in addition to COVID itself.
The World Food Program says people in Haiti, countries along Central America's Pacific coast, especially Guatemala, Honduras, and El Salvador, as well as Venezuelan migrants in Colombia, Ecuador, and Peru, are most at risk of starvation and death. Beasley says the COVID and hunger pandemics must be tackled together. These twin epidemics, he says, cannot be separated because they feed upon each other. He says lives can be saved if WFP urgently receives the $328 million it needs to provide crucial aid in the region. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
In Washington, the House Select Subcommittee on the Coronavirus Crisis held a hearing Friday on the Trump administration's response to the pandemic and plans moving forward. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention Director Robert Redfield outlined the stakes.
We are 7 months into this global pandemic, and it is with great humility that I share with you, this is the most complex public health response this nation has undertaken in more than a century.
Admiral Brett Giroir, the Assistant Secretary of Health, cautioned against relying too much on vaccines in his opening remarks.
Testing is an essential component of America's public health response to COVID-19. Testing enables clinical decision making. It heralds impending outbreaks. It informs resource allocation, and it assists in minimizing economic and social disruption. But we cannot test our way out of this or any other pandemic.
With multiple vaccine candidates currently being tested, U.S. National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases Director Dr. Anthony Fauci outlined how communication was playing a key role in their development.
Several months ago, we put together what we call a strategic approach to COVID-19 vaccine research and development. And the reason we did this is because there are multiple candidate vaccines that are moving along at a very rapid pace. And we wanted to make sure that they learned from each other. So we made standardized protocols, common data and safety monitoring boards, common primary and secondary endpoints, and common individual laboratory tests. There are three separate platforms that are being pursued with government help: nucleic acid, including the mRNA of Moderna, viral vectors such as adenovectors and VSV, and protein subunits.
Admiral Giroir wrapped up his statement with this advice.
We know how to flatten the curve, slow the spread, and save lives. Wear a mask. Practice physical distancing. Avoid crowded indoor spaces. Practice good hygiene by washing your hands frequently. If you feel sick, stay at home. And protect the elderly and vulnerable populations of all ages through your actions.
And still to come in today's program.
We found out about the tiny weddings actually through a Google search in a panic of our December wedding has been canceled. What do we do? So thankfully we were able to actually get a slot because they were filling up so quickly.
This is VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
A number of studies have suggested that there is a link between improved academic performance and accelerated brain development for young people who are involved with music instruction. Researchers in Japan and the UK have released a study that suggests music training does not really affect the cognitive and academic skills of children after all. To make their findings, the study authors re-examined data provided in 54 past studies with a total of nearly 7,000 children that had been done between 1986 and 2019. The researchers found that music instruction seemed to be unsuccessful at improving a child's cognitive or academic skills, notwithstanding the type of skill, the children's age, and the length of time involved in music training. The study was published in the journal Memory and Cognition. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Miller. U.S. President Donald Trump on Thursday suggested voting by mail could make the November 3rd presidential election results fraudulent, asking whether the vote should be delayed. Trump's tweet sparked a debate on election security on Capitol Hill, where Secretary of State Mike Pompeo was testifying. VOA's diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain reports from Washington.
For the first time, U.S. President Donald Trump is suggesting delaying this year's presidential election, grabbing the world's attention with a tweet. In it, he alleges, without evidence, that mail-in balloting may make this the most inaccurate and fraudulent election in history. Trump asks, delay the election until people can properly, securely, and safely vote? The president does not have the power to delay the election, which is to be held November 3rd. The date is set by Congress under the U.S. Constitution.
Committee will come to order. Good morning, everyone.
The tweet came as Secretary of State Mike Pompeo was testifying at a Senate hearing on proposed cuts to the State Department budget. Several Democratic senators said they were stunned by the president's tweet and asked Pompeo if a president can delay a presidential election.
You are one of the most highly trained and accomplished lawyers who are part of this administration. Can a president delay a presidential election?
Senator, the Department of Justice, others will make that legal determination. We all should want, I know you do too, Senator Kaine, I want to make sure we have an election that everyone is confident in. That's not only for
you. Are you indifferent to the data?
Democratic Senator Tom Udall said he is hearing concerns about whether the U.S. will continue to set a good example for democracy around the world, with President Trump declining to say whether he will accept the results of the November election. He posed this question to Pompeo.
So, Secretary Pompeo, if President Trump refuses to accept the upcoming November election due to his lack of faith in voting by mail, will you respect the results of a certified election as the State Department typically does throughout the world?
Senator, I'm not going to speculate. You had about 15 ifs in there. You should know. I have said repeatedly to this committee, I will follow the rule of law, follow the Constitution. I've endeavored to do that in everything I've done, and I'll continue to do that every day.
House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy, a Republican, said the U.S. election should definitely be held on November 3rd as planned.
I understand the president's concern about mail-in voting, which is different than absentee voting. But never in the history of the federal elections have we ever not held an election, and we should go forward with our election.
Regarding voting by mail, both the National Association of State Election Directors and the National Association of Secretaries of State told VOA Thursday they are unaware of any developments that could have an impact on the security of this year's election. Cindy Sain, VOA News, Washington.
A U.S. appeals court on Thursday agreed to rehear arguments that could potentially lead to the reopening of the case against Michael Flynn, President Trump's former national security advisor. Reuters' Gavino Garay has more.
A potential blow to Trump, who celebrated the June 24th 2-1 decision by a three-judge panel that ruled in favor of Flynn and the Trump administration. That ruling said U.S. District Judge Emmett Sullivan in Washington had to grant the Justice Department's motion to clear Flynn. The D.C. Circuit Court panel said Sullivan was intruding on the Justice Department's authority to decide which cases it pursues. Sullivan asked the full court to reconsider the panel's ruling, saying the Justice Department's dropping of its own case against Flynn was unprecedented and had to be carefully scrutinized. Flynn was one of several former Trump aides charged under former special counsel Robert Mueller's probe into Russia's alleged meddling in the 2016 U.S. presidential election. Flynn twice pleaded guilty to lying to the FBI about his conversations with Russia's then-ambassador, Sergei Kislyak. Both he and Trump later accused the FBI of setting him up. Democrats have said the Flynn case is an example of Attorney General William Barr improperly meddling to help Trump's allies. The U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit said it would hold an oral argument on August 11th.
That was Reuters reporter Gavino Garay. U.S. and coalition defense officials fear Taliban militants are successfully ratcheting up attacks against the Afghan government, hoping to push it past its breaking point while often keeping allied forces at bay. The officials, who spoke with the Special Inspector General for Afghanistan Reconstruction, warned that despite the February agreement between the Taliban and the United States, violence directed at Afghan government forces stayed well above historic norms from April through the end of June. U.S. military officials remain wary of the Taliban's intent, but there are questions about how much leverage the U.S. has in its deal with the Taliban. The United States is denouncing the killing inside a courtroom of a naturalized U.S. citizen on trial for blasphemy in Pakistan. Tahir Ahmad Nassim, a 47-year-old resident of the U.S. state of Illinois, was shot several times in front of the judge during a Wednesday hearing in the northwestern city of Peshawar. He was on trial for allegedly claiming to be a prophet of Islam, a crime punishable by death under Pakistan's blasphemy laws. The judicial proceedings against Nassim had been underway since 2018 when he was arrested for allegedly claiming to be the last messenger of God in online conversations with his Facebook friends in Pakistan. The French economy contracted by a post-war record of 13.8% in the second quarter. Although the drop was shallower than expected, the bounce back in consumer spending offered hope of recovery. The contraction in Eurozone's second-largest economy was steeper than the 10.1% reported by Germany, where authorities kept a surge in COVID-19-related deaths in check and did not have to enforce a lockdown as strict as France's. With the ongoing coronavirus pandemic, engaged couples are having to rethink their wedding plans. As VOA's David Byrd reports, some couples are opting for tiny weddings with fewer guests, social distancing, and other protections.
Picture a wedding. The couple, their families and friends and guests, music, a cake, an officiant, flowers, photos, maybe even some dancing and celebration. Now picture that not happening because of the coronavirus pandemic. Couples plan weddings sometimes years in advance, but with the pandemic closing venues and forcing smaller gatherings, some couples, like Ashley and Austin Butterfield, are having to improvise. Ashley told the Associated Press that they found a way to have their ceremony and still be safe, a tiny wedding.
We found out about the tiny weddings actually through a Google search in a panic of our December wedding has been canceled. What do we do? So thankfully, we were able to actually get a slot because they were filling up so quickly.
The venue they chose, Zingerman's Cornman Farm in Dexter, Michigan, outside Detroit, features a tiny wedding that includes venue rental, flowers, a photo shoot, a ceremony, an officiant, a wedding cake, and even champagne. Couples are permitted to invite no more than 8 guests. The Butterfields had 5. Ashley Butterfield says that turning away family members and friends was difficult, but the celebration was a success.
There were family members that definitely wanted to be here and didn't understand when we say tiny wedding, we mean a tiny wedding. But I think once they see some of the pictures and they see what venue we had, they'll understand and they'll be happy for us.
The couple saved on the cost as well. The tiny wedding packages start at around $2,000. The wedding planning website, theknot.com, says the average wedding in the United States sets families back around $34,000. The Butterfields hope to have a renewal of vows next year when, they hope, the impact of the pandemic will have abated. Ashley says that disappointed couples can have a beautiful wedding, even if it has to be smaller.
I guess just to any other bride that's had their 2020 wedding canceled, I know it's hard, I know it's heartbreaking, but try and be creative. There are so many options for you. You can have everything you dreamed of in 2020, I promise.
The Knot.com site says there were approximately 550,000 weddings planned for April to June of this year. The site says that worldwide, nearly 93% of couples have had to reschedule. I'm David Byrd, VOA News.
You've been listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. And until next time, I'm Steve Miller in Washington.
Next, an international public service announcement by the United States government.
Phineas Munyarugarama, a former lieutenant colonel in the Rwandan Armed Forces, is wanted for taking part in the 1994 genocide in Rwanda. Munyarugarama is accused of organizing and taking part in massacres and rapes of Tutsis in April 1994, and for ordering those under his command, including civilians and Interahamwe militias, to take part. Under his orders, soldiers from the Geko military camp allegedly killed approximately 800 civilians between April 7th and April 15th, 1994. For these and other crimes, the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda, now known as the Residual Mechanism for International Tribunals, indicted Munyarugarama on charges of genocide, crimes against humanity, and war crimes, and issued a warrant for his arrest. The United States is cooperating with other governments, the United Nations and the Residual Mechanism, to make it harder for Munyarugarama and the others involved in the genocide to continue to elude justice. To achieve that end, the U.S. is offering a reward of up to $5 million for information leading to his arrest. If you or anyone you know has information on Phineas Munyarugarama's activities and whereabouts, you can provide it with complete confidentiality. Please visit the nearest U.S. embassy or consulate website to contact the Regional Security Office. Email the U.S. War Crimes Rewards Program at wcrp@state.gov or contact us at WhatsApp on 1-202-975-5468. You can also visit our Facebook page at www.facebook.com/warcrimesrewardsprogram. Or follow us on Twitter at www.twitter.com/warcrimesreward for photos of the wanted fugitives. All credible reports will be investigated and the identity of all informants will be kept confidential.
That was an international public service announcement by the United States government.